everyone, and thanks for joining today. On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about a subject that is quite personal to me, but I think it would be quite helpful for me to share my experience with other couples that may be going through something very similar, and that is infertility. So I am someone who's very closed off about my struggles with fertility. And I think a lot of couples are, a lot of women are, they don't like to talk about it. They don't like to share, and they don't want to address it and state it as a fact in front of a lot of people. And I'm someone who does the exact same thing. So I've been dealing with infertility since, I'd say about almost 4 years now. And it's been a very interesting journey. It's been a journey that's taught me a lot, and it's made me learn a lot about myself as well. But I think there's a few things that I kind of wanted to chat about. So I'll start off by talking about infertility in general, and then I'm going to delve into my recent IVF experience, because I think when I was just going through it right now, I would have loved to, you know, hear about someone else's experience and just have, you know, someone there that has been through it and experienced it. So in terms of infertility, I've had PCOS since puberty, I guess. And I always had like a very irregular period, but you know, I went to doctors, and when I was a teenager, I remember my mom taking me to the doctors and being like, oh, our period's not very regular. And then when I was in my early 20s, I did the same thing. And each time I'd go, they'd be like, well, you know, you just take birth control pills and that helps to regulate your cycle. Which I don't know if it actually regulates your cycle as in makes you ovulate, because it doesn't do that. It just makes you get a period every month. And so I was on birth control for quite a significant amount of time. And then my husband and I, we had married for, it was 6 years. And then after the 6 years, we thought it would be a good time to start thinking about having a baby. And I remember being at a gynecologist's office, and this was the first time I was going to a gynecologist with the purpose of, hey, I want to do some checkups just to see how am I going to go through this whole baby making journey. And I knew that it was going to be, I knew that I was going to need some help with the process, because I didn't have a regular cycle at all. So I would go like 6 or 7 months without having a period. So I clearly wasn't ovulating. So even if we were having unprotected sex, I wasn't going to get pregnant because I wasn't ovulating. But, you know, from what I'd kind of read and heard, it was like, oh, you just take Clomid and you're going to get pregnant. So in my mind, I thought it was going to be a very simple, like, oh, you know, you take Clomid for a few months and you try and you'll just get knocked up. So I remember going to this gynecologist initially, and my husband and I were sitting in his office. He was quite like, it's like very old school gynecologist. And he was like, you know, do you guys want to have children? And we're like, yeah, we do, but we're not sure if now is the right time. But I just kind of want to, you know, do some homework and figure out if this is a good time to kind of, you know, do these investigations and stuff just to figure out what's going on. And he said something to us that really resonated, and it was like, kiss or get off the pot. And I remember my husband and I both leaving the clinic that day, and just like that was like the one thing that stood out to us. And I guess basically what he was trying to imply was like, either you do it or you just don't do it, which is probably not the best advice, but anyhow, it got us thinking about it. And so he gave me Clomid, and I was like, oh man, I'm taking Clomid and I'm going to get pregnant. So I took the Clomid. I planned this like really nice romantic getaway for the two of us. And, you know, we tried and had did everything that we could. And lo and behold, I went back to the doctor, I don't know, after 2 weeks. And he basically told me that the Clomid didn't work on me. And it didn't respond to it. So that was really interesting because in my mind, I just thought that Clomid would make me pregnant, but it didn't even work for me. So it was at that point where he said, I think I don't want to mess around and I think that you should go see a fertility doctor. I was 32 at the time. Yeah, I was 32 at the time. I think I just turned 32. And I was going into my 33rd year. And so I think it was January of 2016 that I made an appointment with the fertility specialist and went to go see him. And I distinctly remember the conversations that we had with him. And, you know, he was like really optimistic. You're going to get pregnant and like your prognosis is good and we'll give you some drugs to stimulate, you to ovulate. And one of the things he said to me was, if you want to get pregnant in 2016, if that's what you want, you'll get pregnant. It was just a really interesting experience, at that point because it almost seemed like we weren't exactly ready to have a child. But we felt like we were being pushed into it because time was ticking away for me and because I had this issue where conceiving would be difficult or would, you know, require more intervention than what I thought I needed. And so I started going to this fertility clinic. And for those of you who've experienced this, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But if you know, for those who haven't, I'll detail it for you. And it's literally what they would make me do is they would get you like they for me I would they would have to induce a period because I just didn't get one. So they give you like these progesterone pills to get you to get your period, and then on like the first or third day of your period, you go in to get a scan, an ultrasound done, and blood work done. And then they kind of check your baseline and then, you know, see what your hormones are doing and see like what the lining of your uterus is like and all that kind of stuff. And then they give you some drugs that you have to take, I think, from like day 3 to 5 or 5 to 7 or whatever, I forget. And so he gave me another type of drug to stimulate my ovaries. You take the drug and then you have to come back after a few days. And basically, I was in that clinic probably every single day in the mornings before work to get blood work done and to get a scan done, and then rushing to work, waiting for them to call me to let me know, hey, how many follicles do I have? What's their size? Are they mature? Am I going to ovulate? So I did 4 cycles in the span of 1 year, and that basically each cycle basically literally involved me going to the clinic really often, getting poked and prodded. And you know, I was fortunate that I was responding to the medication, and you know, I was ovulating, but it was in the 4th attempt that I got pregnant. And it was kind of unexpected because I think by that time, like in between the first 2 attempts, or actually after the first 2 attempts, the first 2 cycles, I got these like cysts in my ovaries. So I had to take like a break for a few months before I could start over again. But it was during the 4th time that we tried that I got pregnant. And it was quite interesting because I wasn't expecting it. I'd just become a bit like jaded from the whole process. And you know, you're supposed to go in for a blood test after the 2-week waiting period. And I didn't even bother going that time because I was just like, whatever, I'm not going to be pregnant. It's fine. And then it had been like about 3 weeks maybe. And I was like, oh, I still haven't gotten my period. So maybe I should really take a test. And I took the test and I was pregnant. I was pregnant, and then I went to the clinic and they did my blood work and they're like, yeah, you're pregnant. Yeah. So that, and then they wanted me to come in for, an ultrasound. So I think it was around like the 6-week mark maybe, or the 5-week mark. I forgot. I went in for an ultrasound. And they didn't really comment much on it because it was quite early to do an ultrasound at that point. And then a few weeks later, I went for an ultrasound again, and at that point they said that there was a what they call a gestational sac in the uterus, but in that sac there's supposed to be like the baby is supposed to be in there, but it wasn't. So it was basically empty. And so I just remember being at the clinic and the nurse telling, both my husband and I, like, this news, and we were really confused and we were like, what do you mean it's not there? Like, where did it go? And basically she told us that that means that you're going to have a miscarriage. I think I was 8 or 9 weeks pregnant probably at this time. And so that was kind of the outcome of that pregnancy. It resulted in a miscarriage. And yeah, so I just kind of let it happen naturally. It was painful, but I survived. And after that, I was just like, I kind of just don't want to do this anymore. I really want to take a break. And just really think about whether this is something I really want right now, or whether we both want it in our lives. Anyhow, we moved on with our lives. We moved for work to, another country. And then after like, a few months, I was like, okay, maybe I should try to, explore this journey again. And then went to a few doctors, and they just, you almost feel like a guinea pig sometimes in these fertility treatments, because it usually seems like a lot of this stuff is, I mean, there's great science, there's great technology that's out there, but a lot of times you feel like your body is being experimented on, and people are like, oh, one doctor has one opinion and another has another opinion. And there was this like really, really bizarre doctor that I was seeing, and she was like, oh, you need to take metformin and you need to do this, and which is completely contrary to what my doctors back home had told me. So it was just a bit of a very, like, it was very confusing being in that situation, because you're supposed to trust your health professionals, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that you don't question what they're doing, because you do need to make informed decisions and you need to know the risks and benefits of any treatment that you're undergoing. And then I went to another doctor in the new country that I was in, and he decided to give me injectable stimulation, which I hadn't had before, because this type of ovarian stimulation I'd had before was just pills. So it was Clomid, or there's another medication that they give you called Letrozole. But this doctor wanted to give me injectables, which are quite strong. And given that I have polycystic ovaries, the chances of me producing a lot of follicles is quite high. I think he gave me a higher dose than he should have, which resulted in me having a gazillion follicles, which meant that my partner and I could not try, because there would be a massive risk of twins or triplets or whatever. And it basically was a waste of, another month gone and another wasted cycle. And then I was like, you know what? Whatever. This is ridiculous. I'm not, this is just so crazy. Like, yeah. So that was kind of the pre-IVF stuff. But I do want to talk about the pre-IVF stuff and just kind of my thoughts and emotions during that time, and just with the whole miscarriage and stuff. I think for me, the hardest part about infertility has been accepting failure. And I'm someone who's very type A, an overachiever. I'm generally, used to putting my mind to something and accomplishing it. And this was the first time in my life where I had experienced a situation where I had no control over it. And I think that is what infertility teaches you, that you have to accept it and you have to realize that you can read all the stuff you want on the internet, or you can, you know, do whatever kinds of treatments that you want, but at the end of the day, the situation is not in your control. And sometimes you just have to let nature run its course. So I think that still today has been one of the most difficult things for me to accept is, oh my gosh, like, I haven't been successful at this. And, you know, a lot of times I think about it as, you know, oh my God, I've failed. This is something I've not accomplished. I've not achieved. And I know I shouldn't be thinking that way, but I think it's quite natural for us as humans to have those kinds of emotions. So that's been one of the things that I've been dealing with, emotionally in terms of it. A lot of people, might be wondering about how I dealt with a miscarriage. It was learning to accept a situation that you had no control over. And, you know, in my mind, I just kept thinking, well, I'm glad it happened now and it didn't happen, you know, while I was 4 or 5 months pregnant. And if it wasn't a chromosomally viable embryo, I'm glad it miscarried, because you don't want it, you know, you don't want to continue a pregnancy that's not going to be viable. So I kind of turned the situation around in terms of my thought process, where I was like, I'm actually quite blessed that I didn't have to go through this at a later stage in the pregnancy, where it would have been even more devastating. That doesn't mean that I wasn't devastated. I mean, I was quite upset about the situation. And, you know, I had my moments and I thought I was doing really well. And, you know, I think it was around Christmas that it happened. And I remember being responsible for baking pies for my family Christmas dinner, while I was, you know, bleeding through my miscarriage. But I just kind of kept going, because that was a coping mechanism for me to just keep busy and keep trotting along. And I mean, I'm, you know, it just, I think what it also like made me realize that there were these hidden strengths in me that I didn't realize I had, these amazing coping mechanisms, this resolve. And it just kind of, I think the miscarriage really shifted my thought process in this whole fertility thing, because I think before the miscarriage, it was, I don't even know if we wanted a baby as much as we wanted that pregnancy test to say we were pregnant. And I know that sounds horrible, but I think sometimes you get so caught up in this whole fertility, you know, struggle, that, you know, it's like, oh, it's negative, or that was a failed cycle, failed this, failed that. And you just want something to say you've passed. And you get really caught up in it. And I don't know if this happens to other couples, but I would imagine it does, where you're just so focused on just getting that positive result that you actually don't think of the bigger picture and whether you're actually ready to have this child and whether it's something you really want at that stage in your life. And it turns out for my husband and I that it actually worked out for the better, because we weren't ready for a child at that time. We were moving countries, and, you know, it was a completely brand new experience for us. And it would have been really hard to be pregnant at that point. And, you know, it just, now when I look at it, I'm like, you know, it worked out in the grand scheme of things. And I don't think I was ready for a child. And maybe, you know, it just kind of worked out that way. One of the other things that I've had with the whole infertility thing is I don't like talking about it. I don't like talking about it to a lot of people, even to some of my closest friends. I just don't. I don't want people to perceive me as failing, which again is something I need to work on. But I also think it's like, I don't want people's pity, or I don't want people to feel bad for me. I don't want people to think that my life is incomplete because I don't have a child. And I think these are really important things to realize, for people to realize, because we create a lot of assumptions about people. And society sort of has these like standards and expectations of, you know, of us. And so, you know, if you're a certain age, if you're a woman of a certain age, it's like, you know, the questions start to come up, like, why aren't you pregnant? Are you planning on having babies? And, you know, people might make assumptions like, oh, their life must be so incomplete because they don't have a child. And I think that's like a very big misconception. And I think a lot of women don't want to talk about infertility is because they don't want people to assume those things about them. They are going through a struggle. Infertility is definitely a struggle. It's definitely a challenge. But I mean, from my personal experience, it has not been the theme of my life. It's not the theme of my life. Having a child is something I would like and I would want, but it's not the main focus for me. I want to, and I continue to focus on other things in my life and focus on ways I can, you know, develop personally. I'm using this time to, you know, do things that I may not be able to do once I do get that positive result. So I think what people do need to realize about infertility is just because someone is going through it, it doesn't mean that they're unhappy, because that's not the case. You can't equate the two. It's just a challenge or a struggle that someone has in a particular phase of their life, just like other people might have, you know, their own struggles and their own challenges. So I think that's something that's very important to kind of bring out and talk about, because I've heard this, you know, not about me, but I've just heard people talk about other couples like, oh, why don't they have a baby? Oh, they must be trying. Oh, that must be so difficult. They must be so empty. Their relationship must be suffering. You know, these are preconceived notions that people have about couples that don't have children or might be going through infertility. So I think that's one of the other things. That's one of the things to just really be mindful about is, your life is complete, whether you have a child or whether you don't. Having a child would, if you actually want one, would be, you know, an add-on, a great add-on to your already very complete life, and it'll make it more complete. But if you don't have a baby, that does not mean that your life is not complete. And, you know, so yeah, that's just one of the things I did want to discuss. In terms of, you know, like the whole, I don't want people's pity, or I don't want people to feel bad for me. It's probably also something that I've experienced just through my own family. Like, you know, comments like, oh, you know, poor her, or, you know, don't worry, it's going to happen. I'm not worrying. And so I don't want, you know, I don't want people to give me unsolicited advice, which is another reason why I don't want to talk to people about it, that I especially know will give me unsolicited advice. I don't want to hear your opinion about it, especially if you haven't gone through it, because you don't know what it's like. And so I know this sounds harsh, but if you don't know what it's like, you can't give me advice about it. And if I'm asking for advice, it's a different scenario, but a lot of people will give unsolicited advice, so I don't want it. I remember I moved to London last year, and one of my friends, like, and I'm just moving to like another country and, you know, trying to get settled there, trying to find a place, trying to find a job. And I remember one of my friends was like, oh, I know of a really good fertility doctor. And that kind of really annoyed me, because in my mind, I'm like, well, I just moved countries. I'm trying to find a place. I'm trying to find a job. I'm focused on a lot of other things. And the fact that you would assume that this is the only thing, the only all-encompassing thing on my mind, is pretty ridiculous. But people do have these preconceived notions. So that's why I don't really like sharing these issues with a lot of people. There's very few people I've told about this. I don't even want to talk to it, you know, to my family about it. It's just, I think it's more like, I don't want people's opinions. I think that's kind of one of the main things. And I don't want unsolicited advice. And I don't want people feeling bad for me, because there is nothing to feel bad for. I'm very blessed and very fortunate. So one of the things that this whole fertility struggle has taught me is I've basically used each challenge that I've gone through, each experience, whether it was a miscarriage or whether it was just knowing that, you know, it's not going to be very easy to conceive. I think it's really taught me a lot about thinking positively. And I know it sounds really cliche, but it really has worked wonders for me in coping with the situation. I'm very blessed, and I keep reminding myself of that, not because of the infertility stuff, but just in general. It's just a practice now that I've started to, you know, that's just become a daily habit where, you know, in the morning when I wake up, I count my blessings, and when I'm going to bed, I'm counting my blessings. And it really does make me realize that things could be a lot worse. There's people who actually have very, very difficult lives, difficult situations, and my problem is probably not very significant compared to, you know, people who are escaping war or don't have food to eat or have lost a loved one. So it just kind of puts things into perspective a little bit. I've discovered my own resilience and strength, which I didn't think I had, but I think any couple who's going through infertility probably realizes it, that, you know, you can take as many pokes and you can take jabs and you can get injected and do all kinds of stuff and you survive through it and you come out of it alive and you come out of it a stronger person, whether you've had a success or you've had a failure in this process. It really does teach you that. So I'm actually quite grateful for the fact that I've developed all of these skills and I've matured along the way. So that's been really great. But I mean, you know, does it suck? Yes, infertility can suck. It's annoying. It's hard. It's hard to know that you failed at something. And I know I shouldn't be using that term because it's not a failure, but sometimes we can't help but think that it is. It's just when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, it will happen. And we just have to sort of learn to sit back and not let it, you know, control us. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of just a little brief overview of my infertility journey pre-IVF. Anyhow, I moved to London last year and I was like, all right, I'm not gonna go and like do this ovulation induction anymore because it's just not working out and I need to, you know, get to the real deal and, you know, do IVF. And so I went to a really good clinic. I'm really fortunate and blessed that I get to go to this clinic and get treatment here. Saw a doctor and my husband and I decided that we were going to go the IVF route. And from speaking to a lot of my friends that have gone through IVF, a lot of people were like, oh, it's the worst experience. It's horrible. You know, it's just, it's so tough. And like, you really need to think about it. But I think both my husband and I were, you know, pretty certain that that was the route we wanted to go. I was past 35. When we started the IVF process. And I think what I want to say is people tend to make it sound like it's really bad, but I actually found my ovulation induction experience a lot worse than my IVF experience. With my ovulation induction experience, I had to go to the clinic every single day. Every day they took bloods and they did ultrasounds. For IVF, I did not have that many scans. I had a baseline scan, and then I was given the drugs, and then they brought me in for a scan, and then maybe another day, like maybe, you know, every other day, and then very close to the time that they thought that like my ovaries were ready, the follicles were ready. I mean, they may have brought me in every other day, but I didn't find it any worse than someone who's already done the whole ovulation induction. So I think the ovulation induction maybe had prepared me to do this part. The part that I was quite nervous about was the whole injection part. I used to be someone that was very afraid of getting my blood taken or getting needles, but since I've been going through this fertility journey for a while now, I'm quite used to it. It doesn't faze me anymore. But, you know, the thought of not having a health professional inject you kind of freaked me out a little bit. And everyone's IVF treatment regime protocol is different based on what their condition is. But with mine, there were days where I was getting two or three injections a day. So there were some in the morning and there were some in the evening. I'm very blessed that my husband has learned the art of giving injections. So he's been the best injection giver. And I just still remember like the first time he had to inject me in my belly and we were both so nervous. And then, you know, initially for the first few days, we were a bit stressed and we had to be home by like, I don't know, 9 p.m. because I had to get injected and take my medication. And then, you know, in the mornings he would give me the injections. I'm too scared to jab myself. Maybe it's something that I will learn to do, but right now I'm too terrified to do it. So he's been doing it and he's really been a pro. And I know he gets quite nervous when he's giving them to me because he feels bad that he's hurting me. But I'm really grateful and fortunate that I'm sharing this experience with him, which just makes it so much easier to go through. So yeah, anyhow, you do these injections. You're not doing them for that long. I think it's about like a week and a half maybe that you have to do the injections. And then you go in for the scans and stuff and they count how many follicles you have in each ovary. And then they tell you the day that you're going to have your egg collection. Or you might call it retrieval, collection, whatever. So in my clinic, they made me go under. So I was sleeping when they did the whole extraction. And then you wake up and then they'll tell you how many eggs you had or how many they collected. And then they make sure that you can like pee and then they send you home. I was in a bit of discomfort and pain for the next couple of days after the egg collection. It's not painful during the process because I'm sure all clinics give some form of sedation, so you're not feeling it. But the next couple of days, a little uncomfortable. The actual part before the egg collection can be very uncomfortable because I was really, really bloated. Like really bloated, to the point where I was walking like a penguin because I just couldn't walk fast. And I'm someone who walks really fast. I just couldn't do it. And I just, your body feels really tired because I think your body is just in overdrive and it's producing all these hormones and it feels quite excessive. So I just felt very tired, a bit irritable and moody. I was very nervous the day before, a couple of days before the egg collection, just because, you know, it's the first time and you don't know, and I've never had surgery or procedure before. I keep calling it surgery, and my husband laughs. He's like, it wasn't surgery, it was just a procedure. And I'm like, no, I'm going to call it a surgery. But I was a bit nervous about it. But, you know, you plug through it. I think that's what you learn through this whole process is you got to do what you got to do. And, you know, you get the strength somehow and you go through it. And whether it was, you know, me freaking out about getting these injections or being injected to the egg collection process, it's fine. So anyhow, did the egg collection, and because I have PCOS and I am at a risk of developing ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, I wasn't going to do a fresh transfer. So basically, if there were any embryos that were created, they would be freezing them. So I was fortunate that there were embryos created and that were frozen, and which meant that I'd have to wait for a little bit before I could transfer the embryo. So when my husband and I decided to go the IVF route, we sort of thought, well, what's IVF? Like, you know, in my mind, I thought, oh, that's it. I'm going to do IVF. And I'm just, again, being very naive, like, oh, I'm going to go for IVF and that's it. We'll get the transfer and we'll get pregnant. So anyhow, we did the transfer. I'll tell you a little bit about the preparation for the transfer. So the thing to realize is things don't happen instantly. So there's like a preparation month, which basically means you take some pills to get a period. And then you, once you get that period, on like day 14 of that period, you take some medication to stop your hormones. So it's basically a drug that stops you from producing like other hormones. I guess like pregnancy related, fertility related hormones. And so what the nurse described it to me was like, it's basically like you're in menopause when you're taking this. And I think you have to take this for like 12 to 15 days. I hated taking this medication because it made me like a complete bitch. I just was really cranky, really, really grumpy. Just wasn't feeling good with it, but you got to take it. And then, you are taking some medication to get a period as well at the same time. And then when you get your period, you go in for it, like the same baseline scan, they check your lining, and then they start giving you estrogen. So again, everyone's treatment protocol will be different based on what their situation is like. So for me, they wanted me to take estrogen first. So basically I had to take, I think it was 5 estrogen pills in a day. And so I'm taking the estrogen orally and vaginally. So you do that. And basically what the estrogen is doing is it's building up your uterine lining. And then around, I don't know, day 10, 11, whatever, you go in for a scan and they see what your lining is like. And if the lining is looking good, like it's thick, it's at the thickness that they want it to be, then they'll tell you, okay, now you can start luteal support. And luteal support is basically taking progesterone. So I was taking, because I think my progesterone levels weren't as high, my doctor had given me the whole, every kind of progesterone imaginable. So progesterone orally, progesterone vaginally, progesterone rectally, progesterone injections. So it was any way I could possibly take, shove progesterone inside my body, I was doing it. So I'm going to talk about progesterone injections. The one I was taking is called Lentigest. And I, up until this point in the IVF journey, I had only had injections. I guess they're called subcutaneous and they're in your stomach. And those ones are pretty easy. They don't really hurt very much. But this one I was very nervous about because it was the first time I was getting a muscular injection. So you can do it in your thigh or you could do it in the butt. I'm really terrified of giving myself the injections. So my husband gives them to me. So you kind of have to learn where in the butt to give the injections because you don't want to be giving them too low or near nerve or something like that. So the first few times you're really nervous and, you know, you have these conversations like, oh my God, are you injecting me in the right place? Are you sure? Are you sure? And it's a really interesting injection because you take it in the morning, but like there's like a vial and you kind of have to first warm it between like your boobs so that it heats up because it's oil based and then you can inject it. That's what my nurse told me. I'm sure you don't have to warm it in between your boobs. I'm sure you can warm it in your fists or whatever, but whatever. That's kind of what I was told. So I just did that. And then you do the injection, and then you kind of have to like rub it a little bit, because what can happen is, although the injection itself doesn't really hurt, it's just afterwards, because it's going into the muscle, it can get quite sore. And so this one I was taking, I think, every other day. And initially it was fine, but like by the end of it, I was like, my butt was sore. I couldn't like, and you alternate butt cheeks. So one time you'll do one butt cheek, and the next time you'll do another butt cheek. So there'd be days when like I sleep on my side, and so it'd be like, oh shit, I shouldn't be sleeping on this butt cheek because it's sore, and then you twist over, but then you run out of butt cheeks because you've kind of taken it down so many injections. So that part was a bit humorous. Another injection story would be like, my husband's giving me the injection, and then he takes it out, and there's like a stream of blood that comes out after. And then we have to Google it. Is this normal? And then he's, oh my gosh, the number of videos he's watched about how to give a muscular Lentogest injection. He keeps watching them to make sure he's doing it right. And you know, he'd be very nervous every day in the morning waking up, the day we had to give the injection. Probably more nervous than I was, even though I was the one receiving the injection. But anyhow, so yeah, that was a bit comical, those Lentogest injections. There was another injection that I had to take, and it was a blood thinner. And that was probably the worst injection I've had. And that goes in the belly. And normally I've had a really okay experience with any injections that go in my stomach. But this one is a real bitch of an injection. You basically feel like a bee has stung you, and the pain lasts for like a good 10 minutes after you've received the injection. It stings so much, so much. Oh my God. And you think that your body will get used to it, but it doesn't. It would hurt me every single day. So yeah, that one I would do at night just because I didn't want to take two injections at one time. And so you kind of like develop this routine where you're like, okay, I have to take progesterone orally, and then I have to take my estrogen orally, and then now let me shove some stuff up my vag, and then let me shove some stuff up my butt, and you kind of become this like expert at doing that. Yeah, I mean, it's just it can be very comical, and I think to find the humor in it is probably the best way of like coping with it, because sometimes you're like, I'd be sitting there like lying on the bed, and I'm like, shoving the estrogen up my vag, and I'd just be like, holy fuck, like, did I ever, like, 10 years from now, think that this is what my life was gonna come to, where I'd be like shoving stuff up and like, and planning like a bedtime routine that involved around injections and pills and whatnot. But yeah, it is quite interesting. Anyhow, you take that luteal support for a certain amount of time, and then you go in for your transfer, and then they thaw your embryo, and then they show you a little picture of your embryo, and they're like, hey, here's the embryo. The first time I was like, oh my gosh, it's the embryo, and that's gonna turn into my baby. And then they transfer the embryo. That part is really easy. You have to go in with full bladder, but it doesn't take very long, and it's not painful at all. So it's probably the easiest part of the whole process. And then you're free to go. So yeah, you're free to go, and then you have the 2 week waiting period. And there's lots of articles that are written about the 2 week waiting period, which I read while I was in the 2 week waiting period, and that's the time between the transfer and when you can do the pregnancy test. It's probably the most anxious you'll ever be, because you're kind of like, oh my God, like, should I be doing this or should I be doing that? What if I'm like climbing too many stairs, or should I slow down my walking? Oh my God, did I walk too much today? Oh shoot, I bent down to get like that stuff in the laundry basket. Should I have done that? Was my shower too hot? Is my bedding too warm? Meanwhile, there's a gazillion hormones going through you. It is a very interesting period. The first time we were quite, not anxious, but we were just like, those 2 weeks just weren't going by. And I think we were both very optimistic at that point. And we were like, yeah, like, you know, in my mind, I thought, okay, of course I'm going to be pregnant. It's IVF. Like, how could it not be? Anyhow, we did, you know, after the 2 weeks when we did the test and it was negative, and I was quite distraught. I was like, what? Like, because in my mind, I just thought it was going to work, which was, I guess, a bit naive of me to think that. But it didn't work. And so then you kind of have to call the clinic and be like, hey, I had a negative test, so now what do I do? And then, you know, you stop all your medication and then you wait for your period to come. And then you know, go have a consultation with your doctor again, and they'll kind of be like, these are the possible reasons why I couldn't. But to be honest, nobody knows why an embryo doesn't implant in there. It could be a variety of reasons. It could be a chromosomal thing. It could just be anything. And I think that's the part that baffles you the most, is we've come so far in all of this. And, you know, I'm so fortunate that I have access to IVF, and that, you know, science has come so far that someone who's going through this infertility challenge can at least try this avenue and hope to get some success out of it. But ultimately, whether that embryo is going to implant or not, that is up to nature, and there's nothing we can do about it. And that's just something that I had to keep reminding myself in that 2 week period, but also after. You go through some phases of grief after that transfer, if the transfer fails. And I think I kind of went through those, and I think it's important that you do that, because if you're feeling an emotion, you should just kind of let it run through. Like, if you're feeling sad, just let yourself be sad, and it's okay. For myself, I just told myself, like, okay, I'll feel sad about it for a few days, but I know that next week I'll be less sad, and the week after, you know, even less sad, and I might not even be thinking about it anymore. And that is actually the reality, and that is what happens. Like, the first week, both me and him were really devastated. We were like, oh my gosh, like, what? It didn't work. We thought it would. And then you kind of just move on, and, you know, life comes in the way, and you start continuing on with your life as you should. For the second time, we did the same process. I took a month off from it just because I felt like after the first transfer, my body needed a break, because I was so physically tired. The progesterone pills that I was taking, like the oral pills, would make me feel like I was intoxicated. Just very, very lethargic, and not, like, just very out of it, and very, very tired and sleepy. So my body really felt like it just needed a break, and I took the break, and then I decided, that I was ready for it. And then we both, you know, went to the doctor and said, we're going to try it again. And so we tried the second time and went through the same process, and I don't think I was as optimistic this time, or not. I mean, I was still trying to be positive, but it was more like I knew that there was a chance that it wouldn't work. And then the 2 week period was again tough, but I think I tried to keep myself busy, so I planned things that I could do during that 2 week period so I wouldn't be thinking about it all the time. I like going to the gym, but I obviously couldn't do that during the 2 week period because you're not really supposed to. So I watched like reruns of like Downton Abbey, just to kind of get my mind off and go into a different era and a different life where women probably weren't dealing with this kind of shit. Anyhow, we waited for the 2 weeks and did the test, and it was negative again. Did the test, and I was like, okay, it's negative, and called the clinic, told them it was negative, stopped the medication, and went to work, and just kind of let the pain subside again. And yeah, I mean, it's tough, but I knew that I had gotten through it the first time, and I knew I'd get through it again. And then we met with our doctor, and she, you know, said that if we wanted to, we could screen our remaining embryos to see if they were even chromosomally viable. And, you know, because I'm over 35 and I've had 2 failed transfers now, she thought that it would make sense for us to go that route. And so that was a decision that we both had to come up with as to whether we wanted to test the remaining embryos. And so basically what that would involve is thawing the embryos and then testing them, and then freezing them, and then say if any of them were actually viable to thaw them and then transfer them. And there's always a risk of thawing an embryo. Anytime you thaw it, there's a risk, right, that it might not survive that process. But I got a lot of assurances from the embryologist at my clinic about the fact that they do this procedure all the time. They're very capable of testing these embryos and biopsying them and taking cells, and they only take cells from the outer layer of the embryo and not the inner. But it is a tough decision, because if you test the embryos, you at least know. So say none of the remaining embryos you have are viable, then you know, and then you can kind of plan for the future. Or if, you know, you have, I don't know, however many, and only one or two of them are viable and the rest aren't, or one is viable, then you know that that's the one that you're going to be transferring, and the rest you're not. So it is a tough decision that we had to make as to whether we wanted to screen these embryos or not. But ultimately, we decided that we were going to screen them. Because I don't think either of us wanted to keep going this route of having a transfer and then having it fail. And, you know, before we would know, it'd be another year would have gone by. So yeah, I mean, it's a tough decision, because there's always a risk to the embryo when you're doing this, but I think the benefits outweigh the risks. So I'm waiting to hear from my embryologist as to when they're going to do this process. I think they'll like keep me updated about when they're going to thaw these embryos, and, you know, see how many survive the thaw process and how many, and then what the outcome is. And, you know, one of the outcomes could be that none of them are viable, and I, you know, that will be a devastating thing to hear, because we've worked so hard to create these embryos. But at the same time, I'd rather know now than try each one and have it fail. So yeah, these are the kinds of decisions you do need to make as a grown-up, but during this IVF journey. So yeah, that's where I'm at right now. Going to the point where we're going to screen the remaining embryos and see where that leads us. I'll make sure to update you as I go through this journey, because I think if anyone else is going through this, I just think it might be helpful to know that you're not the only one, that there's other couples that are going through similar issues and, you know, facing a similar struggle, and that you're not alone. And a lot of us want to go through this alone, and we feel like we have to, but I thought I could just talk about it and maybe be a support system to someone else out there, but even just talk about it for, you know, my own benefit and let me vent through some of it as well. But I think infertility teaches us a lot, and it teaches us resilience. It teaches us to be strong and to really appreciate the things that matter in life. and to, you know, deal with things. I think this whole process has really matured, made me, like, you know, really matured me through the process. And I just feel very, I'm just, my mindset, my outlook on things has changed quite significantly. And I've learned a lot of great coping skills, a lot of skill, life skills through this whole process. But I think resilience would probably be the biggest one. But I also think this process makes you quite strong as a couple as well, because you're going through a struggle together. And I feel like it really solidifies your relationship. It also tests it in a lot of ways too. I mean, one of the other things is, I mean, I had my transfer in September, and wasn't successful. I've been spotting for like a month and a half now, almost two. So I had my period and I just feel like it's just not ending. It's not a period anymore, but it's spotting, but it's still there. You're not allowed to have sex, in the 2 week waiting period. You might not even feel like having sex while you're getting injections and drugs through you because your body is so tired. So there's just some like interesting things that you kind of have to think about. But I think if you have each other and you're working on it as a couple, it just really solidifies your relationship. And you just, I just feel very close, like much closer to my partner now after this experience. And I think we kind of make the most of it because we like laugh and we giggle and we'll joke around about it when we're going through it or doing the injections or just all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, just to make every situation, you know, humorous is good too. And just to find, you know, the positive and everything. So I hope this was helpful. I know it's been a long one, but I think it deserve to have that kind of conversation, a very candid conversation about it. And I'll continue to update you as I go through this process. Yeah, anyhow, that was lovely. Thanks so much, everyone. And I hope you'll tune in again.